enjoying your podcast? We'll be brief. If you're looking for the perfect holiday gift, gift scratchers from the California Lottery. With so many to choose from, you're sure to find the right gift for anyone on your list. Now that your holiday shopping list is figured out, enjoy this bird singing Jingle Bells. Give the gift of scratchers from the California Lottery. A little play can make your day. Please play responsibly. Must be 18 years or older to purchase, play, or claim.
Candace Lim, and you're listening to ICYMI, in case you missed it, Slate's podcast about internet culture. And joining me on today's show is someone you know, someone you love. It's Vox senior correspondent Rebecca Jennings. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello, Candace.
Rebecca, I'm so glad you're here because today's episode is about what women have been posting and seeing on their timelines since the election. We're going to talk about the 4B movement, alleged dating experts, and more. But before we get to our main topic, I need to talk about something that has hit Twitter hard this weekend. I need to ask you about something very important, which is, have you seen Hot Frosty on Netflix?
Candace, guess what I did literally yesterday?
Stop it. Stop it.
It was watching Hot Frosty starring Lacey Chabert and Chrishell Strauss for 1 second. She is in that movie for 1 second. It's incredible.
Okay. The movie we're talking about is Hot Frosty. It is a Christmas movie on Netflix. The reason I even know about this is because people were absolutely talking about this on Twitter and TikTok, and people, I think, are liking it. Here's the issue. I am not convinced to press play. So, Rebecca, can you tell me what's it about, and can you maybe pitch it to me?
Okay, sure. So Hot Frosty is like part of this cadre of like Christmas is horny now rom-coms that we're seeing out this year. The gist is that Lacey Chabert is a widow because someone has to die pre-movie in every Christmas movie. Mm-hmm. Lacey Chabert is a widow, lives in this very charming town called Hope Springs. It's a really A-plus Hallmark movie. It's Netflix, but it's a Hallmark movie-ass title. And there's a snowman contest, and there's this like hot snowman. We never find out who sculpted the hot snowman, but she puts a scarf around it, and the scarf is supposedly imbued with, like, good luck. Mm-hmm. And that night, the snowman comes to life, and it's a very hot guy. And if you've ever seen The Night Before Christmas, an incredible Christmas movie starring Vanessa Hudgens, mm-hmm. the Queen of Christmas, it kind of follows that formula where you have a guy, a hot idiot dropped out of nowhere who suddenly has to adapt to like modern dating and whatever. And he's very sweet. And, you know, huge spoiler alert, they do fall in love. I'm so sorry. But yeah, it's funny. It's cute. It's very Netflix. It's very Christmas rom-com. But what I will say is that it is not as good as the other Netflix Christmas rom-com starring Christina Milian and Pentatonics, which I will pitch to you wholeheartedly.
Okay. And before we hear that pitch, I will say one reason I kind of want to watch this movie is because Dustin Milligan plays the hot snowman turned person. You may remember him as Ted from Schitt's Creek, and he's hot, and I'm really into that. But wait, what is this other movie? Because I actually love Pentatonix, but I'm confused. Is it like all members of Pentatonix fall in love with Christina? What's happening?
Oh my God, can you imagine? No. So Christina Milian needs tickets to the Pentatonix concert, which is sold out.
Stop!
Because she's planning on meeting, like doing a sort of a Sleepless in Seattle with this man she meets at an airport, and she has to get Pentatonix tickets. And the journey to get Pentatonix tickets, like, brings her all over town, a variety of mishaps and adventures. And it's just delightful. And Pentatonix is like, they do play themselves in this very funny way. Really a perfect film. I just need everyone to watch it. It's called Meet Me Next Christmas.
I'm dying because Vanessa Hudgens. Oh, pouring one out for her. She is the Queen of Christmas. Okay, we can't take that away from us. And I think what I'm learning is that these two films you just said are actually the best films on Netflix, period. The entire website.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. Having watched many of them. Yeah, they're up there.
Okay, Rebecca, thank you so much for those recommendations because I love being cozy. I love being warm. I love falling in love with Snowman. Now, that is not exactly what today's episode's about because on today's episode, we're talking about how ever since the U.S. presidential election was called, my timeline has been interesting, especially when it comes to gender. I'm seeing TikToks where women are accusing men of being in their feminine era. I'm hearing about the 4B movement. And I wonder if we are at the beginning of a new gender war or if the internet has been in the trenches this whole time. So let's take a break. When we come back, Rebecca will tell me what she's been scrolling through and whether we need to brace ourselves for a battle yet to come as women online. We'll be right back. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes, and it can mean hundreds more in your pocket. Visit Progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states. Whether you're listening to ICYMI at double speed or regular speed, you'd probably love to know how you can get more cash back on your credit card. Either way, we'll slow things down a bit so you don't miss anything. Discover automatically doubles all the cash back you've earned on your credit card at the end of your first year with Cashback Match. That means with Discover, you could turn $150 cash back to $300. It pays to discover. See terms at discover.com/credit card. Hey there. If you love our podcast, then maybe you should consider subscribing to Slate Plus to immediately unlock bonus episodes. You'll access ad-free listening across all your favorite Slate podcasts, including bi-weekly bonus episodes of this show. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts by clicking Try Free at the top of our show page or visit slate.com/ICYMI+ to get access wherever you listen. And we're back. So Rebecca, today's episode is about how our timelines have changed in the last few weeks, especially after the election was called on November 6th. And we're talking here about the dynamics between women and men as they're showing up online. Now, this episode is not really about like the political conversations people are having, but instead what we observed happening on our timelines as two women who cover the internet and pay attention to what the most chronically online people are doing. So the reason you're here is because on November 8th, you wrote this thread on Twitter starting with, quote, "I know everyone's worried about what dudes are watching online right now, but the gender war stuff is not limited to men." Rebecca, I would love for you to expand on this idea that everyone's worried about what dudes are watching online. Like, set the backdrop for us. Tell me more.
Yeah, a lot of people, including myself, have like, after the day after the election, it was like, oh my God, like, this is the fault of the dude, the bro influencers. Mm-hmm. And to a certain extent, I think that's a fair concern. But I think it's one part of a larger shift I've seen online, at least on my own timeline, of this kind of growing gender war between the sexes on places like TikTok and et cetera. And I think the female part of that is a lot of dating advice and lifestyle performance that really separates men and women into two separate spheres. And the thing I keep coming back to is that this exists for women as well. And the video that I posted on TikTok was indicative of something I see all the time, which is dating advice that kind of boils down to like, your job as a woman is to be hot so that you can bag a rich man, because all men are good for is paying for your lifestyle. And you can, you know, if they're going to treat you like an object, we're going to treat you like an ATM. And that kind of like faux feminist female empowerment spin on that, I've been really, really fascinated by. And I think it's like the other side of the coin of tradwife content that glamorizes these very like very feminine performances of domesticity and labor that is traditionally, you know, for women to do and men to kind of not be part of at all because they're out busy making money for you to buy your $10,000 oven or whatever. You know, as much as we kind of worry about the really, you know, sexist content that a lot of young men are watching, young women are also watching that, although it doesn't look the same.
Yeah, and I actually want to play a little bit of the clip you just mentioned. You actually attached this TikTok and you called it regressive and kind of
an example of what you just described. Let's hear it.
This is going to be a hard TikTok to watch because there's a 9 out of 10 chance that the man I describe in this video is the man you're dating. Okay. How to know if a man is in his feminine era? It is literally a disease. It is literally a disease. And they're everywhere. Okay. Starting off strong with, he wants you to text him first. What the fuck is that? Literally, what the fuck is that?
And this person continues by saying that it's weird when a man posts on his Instagram story because doesn't he have a job? Or if he shares his location on a story, he's a bitch. If he takes selfies, if he splits the check, these are all red flags. And I want to ask, when did this TikTok come to you? Do you remember if it was like before the election, after?
This was post-election. I posted that video like the minute that I saw it. And I get a lot of, I'm not dating, but I get a lot of dating content because I write about it sometimes. Like, and I'm working on another project about dating. So like, this is stuff that shows up in my feed a lot. And I was like, I wrote a story last year about this kind of thing, this very like regressive, depressing dating advice. That's like, the best you can hope for is to be like a hot wife that, you know, whose man's pays for your lifestyle. And I think this is very similar to that. It was basically like, watch out for any man that does not like conform to this exact standard of masculinity that we've decided is the best. And I think part of it stems from like this kind of brand of humor. And I've seen videos that are actually funny. I think like there's this TikToker, Becca Moore, who used to do these TikToks where it was like, a list of things that are not for men. And one is like blankets, like that's not for you. And they're really funny. And obviously she's kidding. But I think as that stuff becomes, well, you're just stupid if you don't see men as like, they are disgusting, but like the rich ones are worthwhile because at least you can like get something out of them. It's sort of mainstreaming that kind of sentiment in a way. And this creator was just like so nasty and like she's trying to be so funny and like girl boss and, you know, like slay queen. And I just find it really depressing.
I want to ask, do you think it's mainly women or men who are watching this TikTok or this person? Because I'm like very curious about like how this type of advice from this person, like where does it land? Who does it land to, you know?
Oh, I think it definitely lands to women. I think it's the kind of advice that a lot of women want to hear. It's kind of like this hearkening back to the era of the 90s and the 2000s gender war dating advice books, like he's just not that into you, and women and men are from Mars, women are from Venus, why men love bitches. Like there's all these kinds of really regressive dating advice books that have, you know, come back on the bestseller charts because people are really thirsty for this advice right now. And I think this is in part because fewer people are dating and marrying young or marrying at all. And there's, I think, a panic. There's a widespread panic among straight people of all genders where, like, they don't feel like they're going to find their person because something is wrong with the other sex. And on the women's part, I think it's like something is like, you know, all men are sexist and horrible. And we see, like, data that they're growing more conservative. And a lot of women, you know, understandably do not want to spend their life with a man who doesn't think they deserve access to their own bodies and control over their own bodies. Whereas I think on the other side, you have men who look at the world and they're like, well, all women are just OnlyFans sluts and they only like they're gold diggers. And so you have this huge mistrust on both sides, I think, in part because dating is so difficult right now and people, you know, aren't getting married as young as they used to. And so kind of these like traditional romantic norms are really in flux right now. And so I think that's why you get so much panic over what's going on with gender and sexuality right now.
Yeah. And I kind of want to just take a step back real quickly because, you know, this TikTok was made as like dating advice by a creator on TikTok whose bio literally says this account is for girls only. And she has like 18 million views on her TikToks. And I do think this creator is placing very specific rules on the types of men you should date. And we're definitely going to talk about that philosophy more later. But I do think this is one type of reaction to the dating culture, or maybe even like anti-dating culture that we're in right now. And recently, I've been seeing a lot of girls on TikTok, especially like the day the election was called, being like, deleting all my dating apps forever. I am swearing off men for the next 4 years. Don't talk to me. Da 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 da. And I think the implication was like,
if 76 million people voted for Trump, any man I encounter could be one of those voters who posts things like "your body, my choice." And I first wanted to ask, do you think this trend of women online saying they're swearing off men and dating apps, is it just a joke, or do you think there's actually something darker that's been going on even like before the election?
I mean, I think this really stems from way before the election. I think a lot of it stems from COVID, which kind of put a halt to dating in general. And I think in the past 4 years, the dating apps, which, you know, is the way the majority of people date now, have become so unusable and so financialized that they're almost like impossible to make real connections on. And I know people that have met via dating apps recently and are in really happy relationships, but I think it's much harder to do now than it was pre-COVID, or at least pre this kind of like financialization, where like Rose Jail, for instance, seems like a very big problem that I think more people should be screaming about, because my friend told me about like what it entails and I was so livid. Like,
Do you want to describe it for our listeners?
Okay. Rose Jail is a thing on Hinge where the algorithm like absolutely knows which, say I'm like a straight woman, I'm dating I'm looking for a man. The algorithm knows which dudes, judging by guys I've liked in the past, judging by which guys like me, like it knows which guys I want to match up with. Yeah. It knows which guys are the most favored among other women and other women like me. It knows exactly who I want to match up with, but it won't show them to me. Instead, it will put them in Rose Jail, which is you can only communicate with them or match with them if you spend a certain amount of money to send them a rose. So that's bad for two reasons. One is that you look kind of desperate, and then you also have to pay money. How humiliating. Like this, and they put like dozens of men in your Rose Jail, so you never see them. Mm-hmm. And it's preventing beautiful, wonderful hookup buddies or lasting, loving relationships. It's not letting them happen. And I think that's so evil.
Yeah. And the idea of it is like Hinge has now been trying to make a profit. And so they'll basically give you two feeds. You have your regular feed where I think you can kind of like unlimited X out through people. And then you have this exclusive VIP, think of Bradley Cooper sitting at the back of the club. Back of the club, those people are in Rose Jail, where basically they know their tens, they know you want them, and Hinge is like, therefore you can't have them unless you pay the cover price. And first off, Hinge, how dare you gatekeep me from love? How dare you be the bodyguard? How dare you be the bouncer of the club I didn't even want to be in? But second, it is unfortunately a consequence of the way that dating has now been capitalized.
You know, dating apps in general have gotten so much worse. I think people feel like they cannot achieve these traditional markers of adulthood and success. It's so much harder to own a home as a young person. Mm-hmm. It's harder to access mental health care and regular health care. I think a lot of people, you know, they want to do the thing where like, I don't want to date until I've really gotten my life together, until I get the job that I want, or like I live in a place that I can live alone in. And so since that's happening later and later for people, and those things are harder for people to achieve, you know, they either put dating on the back burner, or they just can't find anybody that would be willing to date someone in their situation, or they can't find anybody that they would, that's like kind of like, you know, quote unquote, on their level.
Yeah. And I think the reason why we're having this conversation now is because, yes, we're talking about dating, but we are talking about the way that women and men interact with each other. And usually that is in heterosexual relationships as friendships, but that also is coming out in the way people voted this year. And actually, I want to take it back exactly a year ago to November 2023, when you wrote a piece about TikTok dating experts and how a lot of the advice they give is actually maybe sexist, because in your thread from this month, you wrote, "I don't think people are seeing it for what it really is and how young women are being sucked in. It encourages trad gender roles under the guise of self-confidence and expecting princess treatment, and at its core is extremely sexist." So talk to me about this tweet and then like how your piece from a year ago has or has not changed your thoughts on this moment.
Yeah, I mean, so that piece came out of me seeing, again, so much of this dating advice that's like, it's sort of couched in the language of empowerment and telling women, you know, like, you're a princess and you deserve to be treated like a princess. And like, while yes, like, of course, like, you know, I think what oftentimes they mean is like, you deserve to be spoiled in the sense that like, your man should take you shopping, or the idea of you going halfsies on a first date is like repulsive to you. And it kind of leaves very little room for like who is this person? Yeah. Are they nice to me? Or do you just see them as someone who like can finance a certain lifestyle that you see online? And I think like, while that can be really attractive for people, because I think like, you know, a lot of women are totally black-pilled. And by that, I mean just so nihilistic about the prospect of dating, like heterosexual dating generally. And it can be really kind of cathartic to hear someone articulate the thing that you've started to feel, which is that like, you know, if I can't find a good man who will just like be nice to me, or if that's even a possibility, then why not, you know, spend all my efforts just getting hot so that, you know, I can bag a rich guy. And for some people that may feel really liberating. But I think when you're kind of giving that advice to just like average people and you're dressing it up as feminism, I think that completely misses the mark on like the idea of gender equality. I think it's, in fact, you know, creating a huge separation between how women and men should perform. And I think that's categorically anti-feminist.
Yeah. And I want to give an example of like what this dating advice may sound like or how it shows up on your feed. So could you maybe explain like who Shira Seven is and like what the sprinkle movement is?
Okay, this is so sad because Shira Seven is like one of the funniest people on TikTok, and I genuinely love her, but I do think she's like promoting these really harmful sexist ideas. Yeah. But she's the sprinkle lady. She basically is, you know, a trat. She's like a kept woman. She lives somewhere with her much older husband, and she, you know, is like, ladies, here's how I did it. Here's how you can do it too. And she kind of argues back and forth with men online who, you know, call her a gold digger and whatever. And by, you know, in engaging with these kind of trolly men, she'll just be like, well, like, all men are dumb. So, you know, why is it bad that women are capitalizing on that? And she does it in a really funny way. And it's very watchable. But that also means that there are tons and tons and tons of like kind of copycat accounts that are trying to do what Shira Seven does, but without the sort of charm and charisma.
Yeah. And the sprinkle movement we're talking about, it's kind of in line of what she's preaching, which is when someone, usually a woman, prioritizes financial stability in dating. So they kind of encourage women to go for the soft life, go find a guy who's like older, wealthier, takes care of you, all that stuff. It's funny because Laura Pitcher did a piece mentioning her for ID, saying that Shira Seven focuses almost exclusively on the age-old practice of hypergamy, which is like aiming to date or marry into like a higher socioeconomic social class. And it's funny because like that term and what I am saying, it does sound archaic. And yet Shira Seven almost makes it sound aspirational or maybe like very commonplace in today's society. Is that actually true, that this is an actual thing that women want? Or is it that this is what men want from women?
Oh, I mean, I think men are very upset about this, which is adds kind of another like kind of funny layer, and which is why it's so indicative of this gender war, because I think men see someone like Shira Seven as like the female Andrew Tate, which obviously is a completely insane comparison. Andrew Tate has been being investigated for like human trafficking and rape. Like, this is insane. Shira Seven, meanwhile, is just telling someone to like get the bag. Yeah. These are two very different people. But no, I think it's a sentiment that's very attractive to a lot of women because it provides this ideal that you can aspire to. It's the same reason trad wives are so compelling to a lot of people, because they embody this life that you could have theoretically if you marry, quote unquote, correctly. And by kind of shifting your aspirations to marrying someone who's your equal, marrying someone who respects you, marrying someone you have fun with, who wants the same things as you, you can kind of scrap all those things and just go for someone who like, well, if I can't find someone like that, then at least I'll make money out of it, or I'll be able to like pursue my interests and, you know, have a Chanel bag or whatever.
I like have so much more I want to say about this and more I want to ask you about. But first, let's take a break. When we come back, Rebecca and I will discuss the 4B movement, women in male fields, and more. Whether you're listening to ICYMI at double speed or regular speed, you'd probably love to know how you can get more cash back on your credit card. Either way, we'll slow things down a bit so you don't miss anything.
Discover automatically doubles all the cash back you've earned on your credit card at the end of your first year with Cashback Match. That means with Discover, you could turn $150 cash back to $300. It pays to Discover. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. There's joy in finding the perfect gift for the ones you love, but it can be a challenge. Saks.com's holiday gift guide makes it easy. Whether you're surprising your hard-to-shop-for sister with a Chloe bracelet bag or gifting your partner a memorable scent from Gucci, at Saks.com, there's holiday inspiration for every personality on your list. I love using Saks.com because it is clean, easy to use, and so fun to scroll around for inspiration. I'm currently on the hunt for a really nice winter coat, and I'm also looking to put together some fun holiday looks, especially with all these Christmas parties coming around the corner. Now, thankfully, Saks has me covered because they have everything my friends have been begging me for, from Le Labo candles to Jo Malone London perfumes. And while I'm there, I might as well throw in these really cute Michael Kors boots I've been dying to gift myself. Saks.com's hand-picked guide can help take the stress out of the holidays. Add instant cheer to your home with some bright decor. Find gifts guaranteed to bring joy to everyone this holiday season at Saks.com. That's Saks.com for the ultimate holiday gift guide and all the shopping inspiration you need.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever find yourself playing the budgeting game, shifting a little money here, a little there, just hoping it all works out? Well, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive, you can be a better budgeter and potentially lower your insurance bill too. You tell Progressive what you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll help you find options within your budget. Try it today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Not available in all states.
And we're back. I'm here with Rebecca Jennings from Vox. So, Rebecca, it's really interesting because I think post-election, a lot of people are trying to figure out like how we got here. And one of the things that I've been thinking about is how much we covered trad wives and how that movement, which is this trend where like women usually stay at home wives and mothers. So that's Ballerina Farm. That's Nara Smith. They kind of post about their lives on TikTok and Instagram in this like very aspirational farm life way. And they've gained a cult following from people who aspire to be them and others who really hate them. I wanted to ask, do you think the tradwife movement or maybe something in that like chronically online sphere has kind of been slowly contributing to this moment we're in now? And this could be politically, economically, dating experts on TikTokly.
Yeah, no, I think absolutely. But I think the thing to note with like anything that's going viral in a big way is that like at every moment, there is like every possible piece of content in the world that like people could be watching if they wanted to. Right. But I think there's a reason like these people blew up because we're seeking them out. Like, yes, the algorithm is like kind of feeding them to you because, you know, they are popular with other women. And so if you're a woman, maybe you're seeing this stuff or like women in your area, whatever. But I also think that like there is something like that it shows that like there is something inherently compelling at this time because people are seeking it out and wanting to talk about it. I think the fact that these people have gotten really popular in that time span has really says something because mommy bloggers in general have been around for like almost 30 years at this point and they've always been popular. But because this very specific version of like the tradness of the tradwife, like if you think about like early mommy bloggers, they were very much like modern women. They were like, usually like they're working moms or they're like their blog is their job. They were writing really personal kind of journal entries really about like their day to day life as a mom. But often they were, you know, sometimes they lived in cities, you know, some of them were like Mormon, but like not the kind of like I'm working on a farm and this could be taken in 1873, like mm-hmm. like Ballerina Farm. And so the fact that that stuff is what's popping. And you get Nara Smith, who's doing this very extreme version of like baking everything from scratch. And, you know, we can totally go into the all like the wellness, like weirdness that is part of that, you know, the hyper focus on ingredients being like evil for you and the whole like RFK and COVID of it all. But I think like that stuff really popped because of all this other stuff that was going on.
I like what you're saying about how at this point in time, everything is kind of a choice when you're on social media nowadays. And sometimes it is quite like accidental and innocent and like, oh, I just like accidentally clicked on this one thing and it gave me 10 versions of this.
Yeah.
At the same time, I think that we have now kind of trained ourselves to hit the not interested button a lot. Like, for example, I'll just say this. Like, while preparing for this conversation, I was thinking about the fact that I have never come across like these male influencers because I always hit the not interested. Like, there are no men on my timeline. And yet, after the election, a lot of the ideas we are talking about came to me via women who were saying those things, which now kind of brings me to this question. What is possibly regressive about women instead of men pushing these ideas? And this could be like the dating expert advice. This could be kind of like the very weirdly politically coded traditional gender role stuff. Like, why does the mouthpiece matter, especially online?
Yeah, it matters so much. I think because we have sort of trained ourselves to think of the influencers that we see, especially on these video apps like Reels and TikTok, as kind of like an extension of our social networks and our friends. Mm. Like, we trust them a lot more than we would, you know, a writer who's writing something to you. It feels like you're FaceTiming with them. And so when a girl who's calling herself a girl's girl is telling you like how to date up and how to like make yourself as skinny as possible so you can date only like finance guys, it feels like that's a friend telling you that. And it feels like you're missing out on something if you're not listening to her, because look at all these commenters and look at all these people that liked that video. Like, this is where the culture is moving. And so it feels like when you see these kind of videos that like everyone is doing this, oh my gosh, I should be doing this too. And that is something that is kind of, I would argue, like pretty exclusive to TikTok and this sort of video first world that we're in. And I think that has a huge ability to like convince people of something they wouldn't have thought otherwise. And which is why there's been so much discourse about like the left needs better messaging. And I think like the lib Joe Rogan stuff is mostly like a joke, but it is speaking to something that is a real issue, which is that like conservatives are very, very good at pushing their messages through things that aren't explicitly political. And if you look at all these influencers that, you know, Gen Z bros and Gen Z young women are watching, they're not political influencers. They do like gaming and sports and UFC and whatever. And on the women's side, it's like cooking and fitness and beauty and stuff. But all of it is kind of, it's there in order to, you know, push this certain idea of gender and what you should look like and how you should behave. And I think taken all together, it's a very conservative message. It's this idea that like your job is to be pretty and to take care of the home. And the men's job is to big, strong man, make money and have sex with a lot of women. And I think that wouldn't work if the messengers weren't themselves embodying that ideal. And so I think it's important that these are women saying these things.
Yeah. I now want to kind of talk about maybe one or two trends or movements I've seen really pop up in the past few weeks. I want to start with one that I think is like funny and hopefully lighthearted, which is the hashtag women in male fields. Have you seen this?
Yes, kind of. Okay. I've seen a couple examples of it.
Yeah. So this is a trend on TikTok where basically women will admit to doing things men have done to them. And this is like, especially in situationships, texting, things like that. I saw one where the screen text was like, when a man tells me his PhD application was rejected and I hit him with the, it's okay, at your age, you should focus on making a family anyway. I also saw one that was like, left him on red while being active on every form of social media and said, sorry, I'm never on my phone. And then the last one that made me laugh was like, when he asked me to post him, but I hit him with the, I don't even use Insta like that. I think it's actually, it's funny because like it kind of reminds me of like women in STEM, which is like a phrase I definitely use all the time when I'm out with my friends. But I actually think what it is that it's women having a 2012 fuckboy era. I really think that they had their moment of where it was charming, it was cute. They were flexing on social medias about literally leaving girls on red. And now I think in this funny way, women are kind of like taking that and being like, oh, well, I can do it too. I can do it in heels. But the problem is we need a name, right? Like, I don't think fuck girls is right. We need a better name. Girl boss is over, so we can't do that.
It's like the kind of black pill woman. I don't know if that's the name, but it's this sort of nihilistic view of like, welp. If this is what it's gonna be, then I'm gonna do fuck boyhood better than you could ever dream.
There you go. This idea of like if women in power are as horrible as men, is that actually equality? And yeah. Now that we talk about equality and movements, I think now is the time to talk about the 4B movement. Mm-hmm. Okay. So 4B is a fringe feminist movement that started in South Korea in 2015, 2016. It reached its peak in 2018. I would argue we're seeing another peak now. And 4B is shorthand for refusal in Korean, referring to the four tenets, aka the things that women refuse to do that were traditionally demanded of them. Women of the 4B movement, their tenets include no heterosexual marriage, no childbirth, no dating, no sex with men. And I have to say that when I first started seeing this hashtag, I was like, isn't 4B a pencil? And then I see the word movement and I get nervous, right? Because another movement that picked up this year was Project 2025. But on TikTok, the hashtag 4B not only has more than 106,000 videos, I am seeing women shaving their heads as a way of saying they're not going to perform for men anymore. And now that we know what the 4B movement is, or it's trying to be, Rebecca, what do you think about it? Like, have you seen these videos? Do you feel like this is actually a revolutionary concept, or have we maybe been here before?
I mean, yeah, of course, we've absolutely been here before. What I think is it's very understandable, right? It's to like feel like men and women are kind of growing so far apart that it's kind of a lost cause, and that, you know, relationships between the sexes is a lost cause. And so I understand the motive. What I criticize of it is that it's very gender essentialist. It has no, you know, no understanding of, you know, the fact that there are more than two genders, that there's multiple ways to be a man, there's multiple ways to be a woman, and everything in between. And I think anything that's kind of essentialist rhetoric can kind of lead you down these paths that are very anti-trans and not very forgiving of people's lifestyle choices that are not nothing to do with yours. These sort of rigid, like, you know, the gender should exist separately from each other. I don't think that's going to lead anywhere good. But at the same time, I don't know how serious most of these people are being when they say 4B. I think they're interested in it because it is a really interesting thing that's happening in the world. But I don't think, you know, this is going to be a thing that sticks in a major way, because it's just so impossible to imagine a world in which men and women have fundamentally separate lives, and not imagining that being like a fascist nightmare.
Yeah, there is this interesting sentiment where people are saying that 4B is not really about men. It's not just boycotting men. It is encouraging women to find solidarity with each other. But this idea of decentering men, and that word in particular, has really been cropping up on my For You page for the past year or so. And it wasn't so much election related, but I think when we speak about like gender and the patriarchy and like how both things exist online, everything is inherently political. And when you were talking about Shira 7, it like weirdly reminded me of Drew Afuwalo. But I'll explain why. First off, do you like Drew? Do you know Drew?
I love Drew. Okay. I think she's great. I think she's so funny. She's hilarious.
Yeah, so Drew is a TikToker you may have seen who takes down misogynists in her comments and roasts them to hell. She's really funny. You may have seen her podcast episodes with Caleb Heron and Brittany Broski. Shout out to Cooper if you know who that is. But Drew has become such a face for this particular movement online.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Drew is also very publicly in a heterosexual relationship with a very hot man, which is definitely part of, you know, her persona online. And Shira 7 also, you know, in a relationship with like an older, wealthy guy, apparently. But I think their difference is that I think Drew is able to sort of see more nuance, because who she's talking to are like really awful men who are harassing her and other women. She's not necessarily talking about like random men off the street. I don't think she's the kind of person that's like, you know, all men are evil. And I don't know if that's what Shira is saying either, but I think Drew is really funny to listen to because, like, what she's doing is kind of taking down, like, the incel brain rot ideology that's really popular online. And she does it in a way that makes them so mad. And it's that much funnier because they get so mad about it. And she does it without apologies. And no matter how many times they can come for her, she knows exactly what to say to, like, make them spiral. And it's extremely entertaining to watch. And I find her version, like, this kind of TikTok version of feminism, to be really compelling and interesting. And I don't think it's quite as regressive as saying, like, you know, all men will disappoint you, so you might as well just, like, give up on love and find a man who will pay your bills.
I think the other thing is that on top of being funny, one of Drew's greatest accomplishments is that she is very vocal about the body positivity movement. And she goes after guys who are extremely mean, talking about her body and her weight and other women's bodies in their comments. I'd kind of argue Shira 7 kind of promotes or at least pushes diet culture a little deeper into the fold.
Yeah. And it's also just really, really refreshing to know that, like, Drew is not kind of getting sucked into this wave of, like, you know, Finspo is back and right. stuff that I think we see so many people have been really disappointed in influencers that they kind of used to see as body positive and you know, preaching, like, love yourself no matter what you look like. And now it's like, well, you have to be healthy. And it's like, everyone knows what you mean by healthy.
Right.
You know, you mean skinny.
Right.
And that's been really depressing to see. And I think Drew is such a powerful voice because she's so funny, because she's so pretty and, like, and you know, just really successful and good at what she does. And yet she will also be like, fuck that. Like, she will mm-hmm. call that kind of, like, Finspo shit out. And I really admire that about her.
We've been talking about dating experts who might be giving toxic advice on TikTok. We've been talking about women who are kind of pushing ideas that we tend to see from, like, Andrew Tate type figures. I wanted to ask, is there pushback? What is the pushback to those type of people? Are people, like, in the comments, like, actually saying, like, hey, chat, this is actually insane? Or does it kind of sometimes seem like we're gliding on this very slippery slope?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. And I really do. I think one of the more depressing things is how little pushback I see in the comments. And when you do see pushback, you know what you always get is that you're not being a girl's girl.
Okay,
that
now.
Phrase has kind of, like, ruined internet discourse in so many ways. Like, thankfully, when I posted my thread, no one said that to me. But, like, there were a lot of people being like, you know, she's right. Like, referring to the woman I posted, not me. But there was a big part of me that was like, they're going to call me not a girl's girl. They're going to call me a pick me. They're going to call, like, they've kind of, that kind of faction has decided on these little epithets to call people that disagree with them, or that kind of points out that what they're saying might not be what they mean to say, or that it might be a little bit more problematic than they want to admit. It's considered, like, you know, you're being an apologist for men, or that you should get a divorce if, you know, if if you're married, whatever. Like, I refer to it kind of as, like, dump him feminism, where it's like, you know, the most woke thing you can do, or the most feminist thing you can do, is, you know, not date men or whatever. And I get it. Like, I totally get it. But at the same time, it's like, if you follow that down to its, like, end point, what you're saying is that there should be different societies for different genders. And where does that leave all the people that don't fit into one box? And I think that's incredibly problematic.
Okay, that's the show. I want to thank Rebecca Jennings for joining me on today's episode. You can find more of Rebecca's work at Vox.com. We'll be back in your feed on Saturday, so definitely subscribe. That way, you never miss an episode. Leave us a rating and a review in Apple or Spotify, and tell your friends about us. You can follow us on Twitter at @ICYMI_pod, and you can always drop us a note at ICYMI@slate.com. ICYMI is produced by Sierra Spragley Ricks and me, Candace Lim, with production assistance from Alexandra Boti and Kat Hong. Daisy Rosario is our senior supervising producer, and Alicia Montgomery is Slate's vice president of audio. See you online or at Hope Springs.